morning.
That's not very professional, Alison.
Okay, we should stop recording, start recording again. No, I love starting with a raspberry. It's Friday.
I just got really stressed because, so silly. The ring light broke, as you probably know.
Oh, I thought
So
you got a different one.
I did get a different one, but it doesn't have a tripod.
You have to hold it the whole time?
Well, I've now got it balanced on, a leaning tower of nonsense behind. So if it and it's not even like if I do
Is it
this,
on? There.
it is, yeah, but I can't lean over the screen the whole time. So it's not ideal.
Damn it,
And
yeah.
it's stressed me out.
You could just turn your chair 90 degrees so that the light from the your window.
But then I'll be in profile.
Well, I would also move the camera. The weirdest podcast ever. Who's she talking to over there? I mean, you could take your
The
camera with you.
Oh, I wouldn't be able to see you then, would I? No, it's too complicated. Ali, it's making my back hurt. It's stressing
Okay,
me out.
that's not th stop already.
Heck.
This is not a stressful engagement. I feel like I'm on the news. I'm shifting my papers over.
Yeah, yes, and you're wearing a khaki shirt,
I am
which makes you
in
look like
today's
you're on the
news.
news, shifting your papers around. Let me put another light on at the side and see if that makes any difference. Dear God, please tell me you're going to edit this.
Nope, it's all going in there. What are we talking about today?
Well, your delightful topic of choice was choice.
Yeah, it is. Because I'm
So
listening to
what?
Gabor and his buddy and his son. A side note for anybody that's listening to Gabor Mate and his son. What's his
Daniel.
son's name? Daniel. I knew it
Daniel.
was a D. Daniel. I'm a little bit irritated by their dynamic. So I'm just going to leave that there. But if you listen to Fresh Start, it's a lovely program where the two of them kind of walk you through a series of conversations and philosophies around the parent-child relationship. And it's the parent-adult-child relationship. Fascinating. And they hit on choice a lot. So that's why I was inspired to talk about choice today, because I don't know about you, but the clients that I work with, there are times when they will literally, I'll have somebody sitting in front of me and they're like, I don't have a choice. I'm like, I know it can feel that way. And so I'm trying to understand how come we put ourselves in that position? How come we ever utter those words?
Well, I mean, I think it's a really big topic. I had a little bit of a look this morning, and there are people who think we don't have choice. So is it Sapolsky?
Yes, the guy who's like, it's all determined, predetermined. You cannot change it. And if you happen to do okay in the world, it's because of luck. Okay, that's my like completely.
And is he the guy who wrote the book Determined?
Yeah.
The guy with the big beard. So there are different
Yes.
perspectives on this. So I think it might be a good idea if we maybe choose an angle to come from. I don't know if we
Okay.
have to do that, but it just struck me. So I wondered, a really basic definition of choice would be picking between A and B or A, B, C, D, but picking between a number of things.
So the fundamental viewpoint that you and I will be coming from today is that we do have choice.
I'm trying that on for size.
Okay, let's do it.
Yeah, I think
I
we
like
try
it.
that on for size. And I think, it's worth bearing in mind that there are lots of things that influence choice.
Oh, yeah. And I think even if we believe that there are still times when I shut down that access to choice.
Yeah.
Or so, life or yes. The universe or whatever.
Yeah. So a very basic definition is I am opting for A or B. Okay. I am choosing A or B. That is a very, very basic definition of what choice is. And then the next sort of thing I think that we're looking at is possibly what gets in the way of us mm-hmm. making choices. Is that a yes. place to look? That's what I've been making notes on, but you may have mm-hmm. another. What inspired you particularly by the Gabor and Daniel?
That there is our survival mechanism will shut down choice for reasons. Like the survival mechanism, it makes sense to our ego to throw our hands in the air and say, I didn't have a choice. Or throw our hands in the air and say, well, I have to do it. To make things obligatory. That serves me, actually. And I get really fascinated by that because I hear it a lot. And I do, of course, I hear it a lot because I do it a lot.
Yeah. And that is an abdication of responsibility.
Yes.
So where yes. I say I didn't have a choice.
Yeah. You can just say I had to.
I believe. Yeah, I had to. I believe I didn't have a choice. Well, what choice did I have?
Yeah.
I'm taking all responsibility
off the table.
Off myself.
Yep. It's very blamey and finger pointy without actually pointing a finger. Right. Mm. If I'm running an organization, or let's say I'm running a family, and I say I have to do everything, I'm basically energetically pointing a finger at everybody else in the room and saying it's because they all suck.
Mm. Yeah, and that is easier, that sort of abdication of responsibility, although it's incredibly uncomfortable. It is often easier or feels easier than doing the terrifying thing of asking for what we want.
Oh my gosh, yes.
So we would rather suffer
yeah.
inside an illusion of not having a choice than make what feel like difficult decisions.
So we've talked on this podcast before, but my spirit animal is the golden retriever, right? That's actually my survival mechanism. My spirit animal is more of like a honey badger, but when I'm in my survival mechanism, I'm a golden retriever. You can lock me in the basement for days at a time and open the door and I will be thrilled to see you. And I will, you know, I'll be a very low maintenance, no wants.
Mm.
And it's a different way of taking myself out of choice. So I may not be the person that says I have to, or nobody else will, or I don't have a choice. I do it in an even more subtle and passive way of removing choice, which is I'll ask you what you want, and then I'll just do what you want. And it's interesting because if you get deep enough, if you play the game where you dig into that and you get far enough into it, the realization that came to me is that the reason I do all that is that at some point I'm hoping that it'll come back around. It's manipulative, which is interesting, right? Because the golden retriever survival mechanism is like, I'm the not most manipulative person in the universe. I will want for nothing. I will never manipulate anybody. But actually, it's super manipulative because there is this deep desire that at some point people will then help me and I won't ever have to ask for it.
Yeah, it's passive, isn't it? It's sort of, yes. it's quietly hoping that the favor will be returned. And we are sold that, you know, do good deeds to yes. others, do unto others as you would have them do unto you sort of yes. thing. We're sort of sold the idea that, you know, what goes around comes around. There are more expressions. I'm just thinking of them off the top of my head that actually would support that view,
mm-hmm.
the view of your you know, survival mechanism that if you are nice enough for long enough, people will be nice, agreeable. People will be agreeable and nice to you. And it will be a sustainable loop of niceness where you don't actively need to take responsibility for choosing anything.
Right.
But you don't need to
have any choices.
You don't need to overtly choose anything. You don't need to make your wants and desires and preferences known, and you don't need to face rejection.
Sure. Or have the awkward conversation around like, no, I will not be doing that. I don't ever have to do any of that. It just protects me and keeps me out of having to make a choice. How else do people take themselves out of choice? So one way is to say, I have to. The other way is to go along, get along. Sorry.
Well, the other thing I was looking at, which I think takes people out of choice, which was Barry Schwartz, The Paradox of Choice, which is where there is so much choice available now to the Western modern human.
Yes.
That we are paralyzed by the choice that is available, because previously, you know, you can have any car you like in any color as long as it's black. Henry Ford, you know, there's one car and it's only, and this is the only color it comes in.
Yes.
And now there is, you know, I watched, you know, Schwartz talking on an old, I don't know, you know, YouTube clip or something. And he was talking about, you know, in his supermarket, there are 172 different types of salad dressing.
Whoa. That's a lot of types of salad dressing.
And this was like 15 years ago. And
there's got to be more now.
There's going to be more. So, you know, his perspective on choice from that, you know, abundance of choice
is
that actually we then become paralyzed because it's on us to make the right decision. So it's on us to make, if we take salad dressing, to choose the healthiest form. And he said, you know, this is not including, you know, vinegars and olive oils, which you can then make
your own
172 different versions of.
Yes.
So we then become paralyzed because we're like, oh my God, I need to make the right choice. All of this is available. There's data. I can read the packaging. I can research it.
Yep.
So we then feel ultra, uber responsible for the choices. Oh, little Miss Piggy flick of the hair. For the choices that we make.
Mm-hmm.
Which is as paralyzing as a survival mechanism getting in the way and having us not want to make a choice and turn ourselves into a pretzel to avoid responsibility. And I listened to sort of tying in with the Schwartz idea of this sort of, you know, plethora of choice actually paralyzes us. Yeah. I was listening to a Desert Island Discs, which is a Radio 4 program in the United Kingdom.
You sound really, really smart and educated. Keep going. I can't keep up with your knowledge. You're reading books and listening to
the radiogram or whatever it's called. What it used to be called.
I don't know.
Yes. Yeah. Back in the day.
You sound super smart.
Oh my God. But Rob Delaney, you know, Rob Delaney, he's a comedian, a comic and an actor.
British?
He was, no, oh. I think he's American. He's American.
Okay.
Big tall guy. Very funny. Was in a program called Catastrophe. Anyway, he was being interviewed on this program and he said he fantasizes and has done since he was in his teens of basically a world where he would be told, this is the job you're going to do. Here is your uniform. Here is your outfit. You will wear those clothes.
Yes.
And he sort of, you know, he riffed on this a little bit, you know, with the interviewer just for a few moments. It was yesterday, but then you kind of like came up with a choice thing, and I was like, oh, he dreams of a world where he will just be told what to do, and
Yeah.
he doesn't have to be responsible for his choices,
Yes.
and he can just go into this nice lull
And people
where he
can
knows,
just.
yeah, he knows what he's doing, and he just does it.
Yeah.
So yes, all of that to say that I think choice can be, I don't even know where we started on this thing that I'm rambling
I've
on
got
about now,
notes. We're good.
but all of this to say that it can be paralyzing, it can be overwhelming
Yes.
to make a choice.
I will also say along those lines, we will make it. Our survival mechanisms will make it overwhelming. It's another way of not choosing. Like, I'm sure there's more that we'll not even get to today, but there's the point is that we're brilliant, creative, crafty. Our minds will find ways to keep us from the things that we don't want to experience. So if I don't want to be responsible for stuff, I don't want to feel like I've made a mistake or I'm wrong. I don't want to be rejected. I don't want to go against the flow. I don't want people to think these things of me. Then my survival mechanism is like, got it. And then it'll go do all these convoluted things. And we're speaking to some of the different ways that it does that. It may be that, like, we love it when we go into Costco. Well, you don't know what Costco is, but like we go into a big grocery store and there's 172 choices. We feel, what's the right word? Like, I like knowing that I can have a choice. There's like a
Power.
maybe. But then I stand there and I'm like, I can't. Then it actually becomes really overwhelming because is 172 salad dressings actually. Is that actually what I desire? Or do I just want 3 or 10? Does that make sense?
Look at
And,
you, or 10.
or 10.
It's
I
like 10.
mean,
It's like 10.
salad dressings, really. There's the different. And then I think, like, I'll watch my husband try to choose between maybe 3 things, and he will make it so overwhelming that I'll be like, honest to God, pick something. So, I'm not sure that the number matters, but I think that the idea, that paradox of choice is a great it's a great term for what our mind does to keep us from actually choosing.
Yeah, I can see that point, and I think quantity can be overwhelming. So I can see
Absolutely.
both, that we could
Yes.
simply have,
Yeah.
you know, like your husband, 3 things to choose from and just turn ourselves into a pretzel because, you know, we don't know which one to choose because it suddenly becomes very significant.
That's another way we do it. That's another way we do it. We make it significant.
Someone
Yes.
who's listening to this as opposed to watching it will go, what's happened?
Allison just had a
Just
that was a
had a little
brilliant thing that you
aha.
said, and I wanted to make sure that I got it in the notes because we do. We make it significant. We make the choice itself significant. In fact, if we make it significant enough, we can paralyze ourselves.
And I haven't read the Bible, but if you go back to Adam and Eve, and that story of where choice came from, you can have anything in the garden, but don't eat that.
Yeah.
And then choosing that thing, and then the enormous responsibility, and the, you know, there's sort of a story embedded
Yes.
in
Yes.
I'm, you know, I don't go to church. I was
We've
raised
just
as a
lost our
Catholic.
listener.
Yeah. Tracy's like,
Tracy's.
"Durr, I'm not listening to this woman." But you know, I was raised as a Catholic, but I don't go to church. But that story of making the right choice is as old as time immemorial, certainly as old as the Bible. So there's sort of a thread, isn't there, running along here about like,
Yeah.
make the right choice because, you
Otherwise, you're
know,
going to damn all of humanity forever and always. Yes.
yes, and you will be responsible.
I also think that evolutionary wise, that is also true, right? If you make a poor choice or a risky choice, you would die, right? Like the cost of making a poor choice was a lot higher than it is now.
Yes.
So I think that there is significance in choices.
Yeah.
I think that that's appropriate and it makes sense and it like keeps us alive and that's why we're still on the planet, all those things. And
yeah,
yet
yeah.
when we get to like our daily life and like what are the choices that are significant, that are actually significant and which ones aren't?
Yeah,
That's a fascinating
distinguishing.
place to
Yeah.
Play. Yes.
Yeah,
like Steve
distinguishing.
Jobs, he wore a turtleneck and blue jeans every day.
Yeah.
Do you know why? Because he didn't want to have to choose.
Yeah, totally. I used to just wear
Brilliant.
Black clothes to work. They were,
It's
you
so
know,
easy.
one had a collar, one didn't, blah, whatever. But I didn't have to think about it. That was what I wore to work. I didn't have to think about it. I didn't want to think about it. So yeah, there's something there about, you know, it's not life. Yes, some decisions, some choices are life or death or very significant. Mm-hmm. Others, like, do you have the steak or do you have the whatever? The soup. I don't know, the casserole.
The taco.
The taco are less significant.
Seven tacos last night. Your son
no,
hit
I don't.
seven.
I do not believe you.
So
Tracy,
I'm not
I just want you to know that my son is staying at Allison's house and basically eating all the tacos in that region.
He's like a tapeworm. It just never, I don't know where he puts it.
How big are the tacos? I bet they're not big.
Regardless, seven tacos is a fuck ton of tacos.
Alice,
like that's
just,
a lot. I know.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean,
you
not
didn't go
not
to
if
church,
they're
so I think we're
not
okay
if they're
now.
we've lost. It's all gone to
Tracy
pot.
left 10 minutes ago.
Oh my God. Okay, so let's bring ourselves back. So we've kind of like meandered around and looked at the things. Something else, I've got a little quote here, which is attributed, but also possibly disputed, attributed to Viktor Frankl.
Okay. The meaning of life, the quality of man. What did he write? Man's search for something?
Man's search for meaning.
There
yeah.
it is.
So between stimulus and response,
yes.
there is a space.
Yes.
In that space,
his
is our
choice.
power to choose our
Boom.
Response. In our response lies our growth and our freedom. So to that kind of brilliant point, I was sort of thinking, you know, looking at what Sapolsky said about the fact, you know, that for him, there is no, you know, his argument is there is no choice whatsoever. And I was sort of thinking about, you know, our family of origin, our history, our cultural, you know, norms, all of these things inform choice. So we might think we're making a choice, but what would be a natural choice for me would be possibly quite different from you, for you, because you live in it, you've grown up in a completely different part of the world with, although they might look similar, with quite, you know, quite possibly nuanced differences that would have you make different choices to me. So that stuff is all there as well. We may not have much time to go into huge depth with it today, but just knowing that all of that is impacting and informing what feels to us like free choice, free will.
Yes. Right. Yeah. The point that he makes is like, he just takes it all the way to the extreme, which I love. Like if we just run this out to infinity, what does it look like? Well, it's every single experience that you have as human on this planet determines the choice you will make. A lot. So I take that to mean I'm not surprised a lot of times.
By your choices.
Or others.
Or others.
Right?
Yeah.
Because like, of course, it, like, anyway, so I think that if we run it all the way out, then it could just be, does it mean that we don't actually have any choice? That all of these things are just adding up and then they just point us in a direction where the choice has already been made. There's no way Allison's going to make a different choice here. She's incapable of it, given the 50 years of experiences that she's had. Of course, this is what she's chosen.
So then your choice becomes predictable,
yeah,
even though
absolutely.
It feels like a choice to you.
Right. It isn't. That's
Did
his
you have
point.
More? Yes,
so,
that's his
so
point.
If, well, I love that he runs it all the way out to the end. Mm. Like, okay, this is, if this were true, then this is, and then he wrote a whole book about it. Interesting. Then there's the other side, which is the Viktor Frankl or not him, that says like our stimulus and response is really tightly, it's very close, right? And sometimes you can't even see the light in between the two things. And if you can just get that to pull apart for, you know, a nanometer, then you have a chance at making a choice. And the way I actually think about it is I get a chance to make a different choice.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of my choices have been predetermined by my life, my history, my experiences, the way I was raised, all of that, who I am, my essences, la, la, la. Mm-hmm. And I also have experienced the ability to slow down time so that I can make a different choice. I will go against everything that I've ever known.
Yeah. What was that? Finger
think,
in the air.
I think.
I think.
Now,
okay, yeah, we're
pulse,
exploring.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, we're exploring here. We don't, Tracy, if you've come back.
You're still here.
We don't have the answers. We're just playing here. We're just exploring and, you know, I don't know, chatting. So if we sort of move in, if we take that, if we take potentially a attributed to Viktor Frankl, the idea that between stimulus and response, there's a wafer, wafer thin gap.
Yes,
and in that wafer thin little space, we have an option.
Yeah.
We have an opportunity to do, choose, be something that is not predictable for us. And really, as coaches, that's sort of, you know, in the land of possibility, that's where we are playing, that's where we're interested in exploring in that territory. What practices would support bringing more consciousness and more intentionality to that wafer thin little crack of light between the two?
So I'll share two that I have found to be wildly effective.
Okay.
The first one is...
That's quite an assertion, Alison Garner.
Wildly
effective.
That's right. First one is to just make the choice and then empower the choice. Make the choice right, right? In that order. Just make the choice and then make it be the right choice.
Okay.
Because we get to decide and... The funny thing is that, like, you make the choice and you'll never know what the other choice would have brought you because you didn't make it. So for me, that brings me a lot of grounding and a lot of freedom because, like, it actually doesn't matter what choice I make. Just make it. Make it, empower it, and run with it. And you've been around me long enough to know that I make choices, like, almost too fast.
Well,
right. Some people
sometimes
are like Jesus.
Doesn't even look like you've made a choice.
That's also true.
But they are lightning, like that one, and off you go. Yeah,
yeah,
great.
And
yes,
I'm
absolutely
running.
Yes, yeah, you've made the choice, and you're off after it. Yeah,
and
totally.
There's pros and cons to that. Some of the pros are that I'm not debilitated by making choices, and every once in a while, like I make a choice, and because it turns out well. That's kind of nice that I didn't just like bobble around and hope for the best. I just made the choice and went. And the third benefit I would say is that because I can make choices fast, I can change direction fast.
Mm.
The cons are that I lose people, right? My husband's like, "Where'd you go?" And I'm like, "I don't know. I made 10 choices. Where are you?" And he's like, "I don't know. I'm doing the math." I'm like, "What are you?" He's like the measure twice, cut once. And I'm like, cut it 1,000 times, we'll buy more. So we're on opposite ends there, which is, I think, why it works. The relationship works pretty well. And I think, you know, being, you know, you and I working together, you've noticed, like, I lose you a lot. You'll be like, "Hey, Allison, can you come back?" So for people, if I want a partner, that's going to be something that can get in the way. So those are the cons. So that's the first thing that I love, is just make a choice and empower the damn thing.
Yeah.
I love that you're love laughing.
I'm just smiling away here. If you're on audio, you're not going to be able to see it. I'm just smiling away. Okay. So what's your second,
wildly effective. This is how I'm marketing it.
Yeah.
This is the book. Is the more I practice calming my nervous system, the more I feel like I am not reacting constantly, automatic reactions, right? That if somebody yells and I yell back, if somebody gives me the finger, I give them the finger back. If somebody cuts me off, I can take the breath. And because I've practiced it enough times, now it works. When I take a deep breath, I do calm my nervous system. Everything kind of settles. And then I can decide what I want to do from there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would add to that, that was one of the things I had put down, that sort of, you know, calming exercises, so that we respond rather than react.
Correct.
And I would add to that sort of any kind of self-care or self-compassion, and they are different, but self-care and self-compassion, so that we're resourced. Which feels like a very American expression, but
I think it's Canadian.
Oh, I beg your pardon.
I'm totally kidding. We don't have any Canadians in the room, so that's okay. What we'll say.
Tracy's aunt is Canadian, so
she can ask her.
I think another faux pas we've made today. But you know, that sourcing of self, resourcing ourselves, and I'm sort of thinking in terms of developing our own intuition, which again, all of these different arguments bump up against each other, you know, like people crammed into a bus together, like they're all rubbing shoulders, and you know, I don't know which one is right. But you know, because if I believe that I have no choice, I probably don't have any intuition either. But if I just play with the idea that there's intuition, I have been, you know, developing my intuition so that's my capacity. I see that as my capacity to listen to that quiet inner voice. And I've been developing that by resourcing myself, by being compassionate with myself, by allowing myself time, by spending time calming my nervous system, by noticing when my nervous system is all over the place. Like I had stress running down my back because of this lamp. Like I could feel, you know, my back was tight because I was like, this lamp did not do what I thought it was going to do when I opened the box. I was really stressed about it, but I shared it with you and obviously Tracy. And that eased, for me, that eases my stress levels. It reduces my stress levels and helps me to kind of regulate myself because I'm not having to mask that I'm experiencing stress. I'm sharing that I'm experiencing. So all of that to say, yes, any, you know, breathing exercises, early nights, you know, eating good food, drinking less alcohol, drinking more water, all of the things that we do to care for ourselves, to resource ourselves. I keep saying to allow us access.
Yes.
To our intuition and what feels right to us in the moment.
And I like that you have, like, there's this wise voice. I know the dialectic behavioral therapy talks about wise mind, and it, I think it like stands for something. I don't know. They have a lot of acronyms where you're like, oof, there's too many.
But no, anyways, you're sounding very well read and
don't clever. I've had a lot of therapy.
You lost me.
Yeah. The dialectic behavioral therapy.
Oh my God.
We talk about wise mind.
Andrea, and it's incredible.
They talk about like trying to access that voice, the one that's like, you know, giving you wisdom instead of the loudest voice, which for most of us is a really critical judgmental voice. And I know in AA world, they say, don't go with your first choice, go with your second choice. It's like a version of that where the first thing that pops in your mind is that really loud voice, which is the typically the critical criticizing thing. So if we can like, okay, great, heard it. That's my ego. That's my survival mechanism. I'm just going to set that to the side now. And I'm going to listen for like, okay, what else is going on here? Like, what else can I hear? And that's where like the wise mind or the second choice or that voice that speaks truth, you know, and desire and is like more in tune with who I am when I can hear that voice.
Yeah. And I think my experience is, I'm going to speak about myself. I don't think I'm unique in this, but that I spend a lot of time in my mind, in my head, and less time in my body. You know, my body is just something that keeps my head straight over my desk. It's not of any consequence, you know, unless I'm feeling stress in my back, in which case I'm now suddenly very aware of my body. So I have been recently doing some sort of slower exercises where I become, you know, to bring my attention to my body when it's not in a state of stress or anxiety, which is actually helping me to distinguish. I'm really, you know, I was really noticing what to, you know, not to say to somebody else would have been less noticeable, but really notice that slight tension across my shoulders and in my back as I started to get stressed about the lamp. Where was I going with this? But bringing ourselves into our bodies feels like a really useful thing to do. I think I had something way cleverer and more important and mind-blowing to say about that, but it's flitted away.
Well, I've got an idea. When you are, okay, I don't want to use the word hijacked because therapeutically that's a thing, but you know what I mean. Like when you are in relationship with somebody, let's say we use somebody that you work with and like you have history with that person and that person is doing the thing and you're like, and suddenly you're in the tension with the thing that they're doing. Let's say that they smack their gum really loud and you're just like, oh, there it is. Oh no, right? And you stress out and you and the tension comes up. That puts you in a place where you're just reacting. How do you get yourself down into like, okay, how do I respond? Like, how do you unravel that tension? Or how do you ease that tension?
Small things, you know, I mean, it might be removing myself from the room for a moment and you know, going to the bathroom, as you would say, the restroom, and just taking a moment and taking a breath. What else would I do? I think sometimes I would rationalize in a situation like that and kind of talk myself down out of it. But I'm finding at the moment the most effective thing seems to be more calming my system. You know, breathing, doing the breath along your fingers.
Yep. That's a good one.
You know, or box breathing. There are thousands, aren't there? You know, too many to choose from, as they say.
Yes, boom, choose boom. One and just use it.
Yeah, choose and use. But yes, lots of ways to bring myself back into my body.
Okay.
Back grounded so that there I can deal with the lip smacking.
Yes. There's two more that came up while you were talking before. And one is something that you and I are familiar with, which is you choose a stand for the day, which again is very ontological and it's like fancy wording that doesn't make sense to most of us because we're like, what do you mean choose a stand? But there is, for example, I love these spirit animal oracle cards. So a really lovely practice is you choose one of these cards and then whatever card you choose gives you the thing to like choose all day long. So let's say I pick the cat spirit, right? You read it and you can make all sorts of meaning out of it. Or you can just say, okay, that's the spirit of independence. And so all day long, when I'm in a thing and someone's smacking their gum and someone's driving in the left lane and they're not passing anybody, all the thing. And then my husband comes home and he eats almonds and I can hear it and he won't make a choice and we've got to take the boat, right? I can always go back to like, okay, cat spirit, like independence. How do I worry about myself? How do I take care of me? How do I make sure that my needs are met, right? It's just a lovely place to come back to. So anyways, that's one, is you can choose a stand for the day.
Yeah.
And then the other one is, this is another place that I think is really powerful that puts us back into being at choice, which is getting complete. So when we're dealing with relationships that are important to us, or we have a lot of shared history with, parents are a really great example, spouses, our kids, our colleagues, our bosses, maybe our neighbors, that I will very quickly and automatically slip into a dance with somebody and have absolutely no access to choice in that.
So you go into the automatic relating.
Yep, because I'm not complete about how that relationship is going or how it's been, and I'm still energetically carrying all these rocks around with me, and it doesn't take anything to set me off, and here we go. And I'm just stuck in the thing, and I cannot get out. And I'm saying things that I always have said, and I'm sick and tired of this pattern. And yeah. And completion is the practice of looking at all of that. And we can talk about that on a different podcast, I think, because I think we've talked about it in ones. But
yeah,
there's lots of different ways to get complete so that when you are done with that completion exercise, you can see, this is going exactly the way it is supposed to be going, given them, given me, given our history. And so that there's like this lovely energetic release of like, I don't have to carry that around anymore, which puts me back in choice.
Yes. I mean, the exercise is to vent incompletion.
Mad, glad.
Yes, you know, vent and say all the things. No one is ever going to see it. It's a private exercise. Then all the things you're grateful for, either yourself that you can acknowledge yourself for or the other person, and then the choice piece.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What now?
Yeah.
What now?
What do you want? So if we talk about like my parents, I can have all the complaints about the relationship and how I'm the victim of all their stuff, right? Mm. It's very easy. It's culturally, that is a thing that is very common and normal. We tend to put a lot of pressure or a lot of a lot of therapy is derived from our childhood. And so it's really easy to slip into like, well, it's not my fault because my parents were XYZ. They were divorced. They were alcoholic. They were this, they were that. And until I get complete about all of how that's all gone, if I'm incomplete, then I'm just going to keep slipping into victimhood. And then I have no choice.
Yeah.
It's not my fault. I have to call my mom. I have to take care of her. I have to do the thing. And you're like, but now you're treating your relationship with your parent as an obligation, which means there's no choice.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the exercises that we've outlined, you know, another one is just very simply journaling. You could journal about your values. You could, which will help you make choices. Again, very simple. Yeah. A little exercise book from the supermarket, doesn't have to be fancy, and just journaling about your values, and that will support you. Mm-hmm. That supports me to make choices that are, in alignment with. Yeah. What else? And exploring, again, just through journaling, making notes, what we want our lives to be about, which is kind of an extension of that, you know, what matters to me. What do I want my life to be about? And is the choice I'm making now going to take me closer to what I want my life to be about, the things I care about, or further away?
Yes.
So just really, you know, boiling it down to really simple things. I value honesty and integrity. So if I make this choice, does it take me closer to that? Does it, you know, vibe with that? Is it in alignment with that? Or does it take me further away?
Yep.
Just really simple things that help us to, whether Sapolsky is correct or, you know, what's the other guy's name? Barry.
Victor. Schwartz, Barry Schwartz, yeah.
Or Victor, who knows? But it's a lovely place to kind of like, it can be a lovely place to play.
Agreed.
Sort of looking at being conscious, being intentional, being aware, being awake, and taking responsibility for our choices. Takeaway, Ali, anything that is new or different for you in this conversation today, something you hadn't thought before? Or
I think I've now landed on they're all right. They're all not right, but like, I think that they can all be right. I don't have a better way of saying it.
They can all coexist.
Yeah. I think that a lot of the, what I like to think our choices are actually predetermined logical progressions of a life and a level of experience and things. I absolutely agree with that. And I also agree that there is an opportunity for me to choose differently if I want to. And it's not easy. It's really, really hard. And if that's something that I want to experience, because it is really, it's freeing and it's empowering. And I feel like when I think and believe that I actually do have a choice, that I find to be a much better experience of life than it's all predetermined. So if that's the experience I want to have, then I have to go about, if I really want it, then I have to go and create it. So I think they're both, I think they're all correct. And then, yeah, you go.
And then?
I chose not to, I'm making a choice right now not to say the thing because I don't think it adds
any
value.
You, demonstrating choice. Amazing.
Look at that.
I think mine is very similar, actually, Ali, that all of the, you know, elements and fragments of all of these feel true to me.
Yeah.
So I've enjoyed that. My takeaway from today is I've really enjoyed the exploration. I haven't come away with, you know, the answer. I'm just like, oh yeah, there's a lot going on when I'm making a choice. And how interesting. So yeah, I've just found it really interesting, really enjoyable. That's kind of my takeaway.
Lovely.
What's going on?
All right, I'm going to stop recording. You have a great weekend, lady.
And you. Mwah. Bye, Tracy.
Okay,
we love
bye.
you.